Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to another episode of the Lizelle Wellbeing Show. And I have got a mouthwatering episode lined up for you today, as I have just been joined here in my studios by one of the nation's best loved restaurateurs and cookery writers. He is the author of not one, but seven best-selling cookery books and has been a weekly columnist for the Saturday Guardian for over 13 years. There, he is best known for sharing his infectious love of veg and has been singing the praises of cauliflowers, pomegranates, lemons, and his firm favourite, aubergine. My guest, of course, is Yotam Ottolenghi, and he's here to share more about his new book, Flavour, and he reveals how to totally transform everyday veggies into magical dishes, whether they be weeknight dinners or seasonal showstoppers. Now, don't forget, if you would like to watch my chat with Yotam, you can head over to the Lizelle Wellbeing YouTube channel. Otherwise, settle in, put the kettle on, and let's get into this week's episode. So, Yotam, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for finding my little studio. Bit tucked away.
Yeah, but very charming nonetheless.
You got here. So let's start at the very beginning. You were born and grew up in Jerusalem, is that right?
Yes, I did. I'm the son of the 1970s and 80s.
Okay.
And I spent the first few adult years of my life being a little bit confused. I went to university.
Yeah.
And I studied philosophy and literature. And when I finished that, I thought maybe that's not quite the place for me. And then that's when I started cooking in the late 1990s.
So did you grow up with food then? Did you grow up? Because I've been to Jerusalem and I've enjoyed the most amazing meals.
Yeah, Jerusalem has very good food.
Yeah.
And I grew up with very good food, both at home, because both my parents were very good cooks.
Mm.
And also outside the home, if you traveled in Jerusalem, you know there's a lot of street food. There's a lot of beautiful restaurants that serve meze, and you know the whole kind of Middle Eastern atmosphere is just it's wonderful, it's intoxicating, and
I
grew up in all this.
And then to make the leap to actually professionally cooking, how did that happen? So you presumably came to the UK.
I came to the UK in 1997, and I went to the Cordon Bleu cookery school to take a couple of courses. As anyone who's tasted my food, you know, would know that it's anything but French.
Yes.
So I've always been there. I need to explain that. But I mean, I've had a really good basic training there for a few months, and then I just started working in patisseries and restaurants in London. And I wasn't always, for quite a while, I wasn't entirely sure that this is going to be my last career station, cooking or food. It was really hard. I was kind of nearly 30 and I was thinking, is that the right place for me? But I fell in love with it and I persevered and the rest is history.
Well, we're very glad you did, because I think you're the kind of the godfather of bringing so many interesting things into more of the mainstream. I mean, for example, I had some burrata for lunch today and I sprinkled pomegranate seeds on it. And I immediately thought of you because, you know, you are the kind of the guy who has brought us pomegranate seeds or, I mean, certainly things like pomegranate molasses as key ingredients, which I think none of us were using before you promoted it.
Yeah. Well, for me, those ingredients that are kind of the core Middle Eastern ingredients, you know, tahini and pomegranates, rose water and preserved lemons and all these things were things that were familiar and I grew up with. So it wasn't like I was inventing something. I was just kind of cooking with the things that were familiar to me. But I also realized that they were very effective here. Because essentially what happened is that I think in the last couple of decades, since I started operating here, people have really wanted, first of all, two things. Wanted to cook more vegetables and eat more vegetables, which wasn't the case before. Quite the opposite. And they wanted to do exciting things with vegetables. So I come along and I find a real keen audience to the message of actually vegetables are amazing. It's just what you do with them.
Yeah.
So all these Middle Eastern condiments are really, really good, fantastic good way to kind of squeeze out every inch of flavor from a vegetable, whether it's a cauliflower or a tomato or a courgette or pulses or grains. You know, these are just things that need a little bit of help. It's easier sometimes with other foodstuffs, like a good beautiful piece of fish. You know, you can pan fry it and squeeze a lemon and it's almost kind of you're done. But vegetables, you can't do that with a potato. You need a little bit more help.
Now tell me about za'atar, because you talk about condiments, but that again is something that we very much associate with you and having kind of brought that to us. What is it and how should we be using it?
Za'atar is, so there's also a misconception because some people call it a herb blend or a spice blend, which is actually not true. So za'atar is a name used throughout Palestine, Lebanon, Israel, Jordan, that part of the Levant, for a particular herb that grows wild. It's from the department of the oregano
or thyme, or marjoram.
Yeah, it's called za'atar. It's got a very particular flavor, but if you taste it, you could mistake it for oregano.
Right.
And it grows wild, and it has a particularly intense flavor in the very dry season when it's really dry. You know how some herbs and plants really thrive when they don't have the moisture because all the flavors concentrate.
So intense.
So when you pick za'atar in the hills of Palestine or Israel and you get those kind of the really, really intense marjoramy oregano flavor, that's the za'atar, that's the herb. And it's been in the region for millennia, but the way people know it here is in a dry form where it's dried and ground into powder, and it's mixed with sumac, which is another berry that's dried and pounded. It's quite red and it's very acidic. So za'atar, the herb, is mixed with sumac, sesame seed, and salt, and creates a green powder, and that's also called za'atar. So the powder itself, which is the blend,
but it contains za'atar.
But it names after the main herb, the main ingredient.
Interesting. So za'atar, sumac berry, sesame and salt,
and you grind it together. Salt, all mixed together, and it's powder. And so when I go to the supermarket and I see a jar and it says za'atar, and then you look at the list of ingredients and it says thyme, chopped up parsley and salt and sesame, I said that is just not za'atar. Whatever you want to call it. So you really need the original herb in order to make it properly. So the ones that you should really get are imported from the Middle East.
And should we always be grinding our own? I mean, do we need a pestle and mortar? I mean, that's presumably how you work to make it fresh.
No, you buy the powder, so you can go and get the herbs, but you can get dried za'atar leaves in some Middle Eastern shops. I would buy, and most people would buy, is that mix, the mix of za'atar, sumac, sesame, and salt. And that gives you the za'atar flavor. And that's very easy to use. You sprinkle it over over chicken, over roasted vegetables. You can make that confused oil with it that you spoil.
What's a confused oil?
Infused
oil. Infused
oil.
I was going to say, it wasn't quite sure
you
where it was coming from.
Confusion as well.
Confusion of the labeling, maybe.
Yeah. So infused oil where you put it in oil, let it sit and it flavors the oil.
Nice.
But that goes wonderfully well with aubergines, with courgettes, with roasted pumpkins. Anything could benefit, even lamb, roasted lamb. Anything benefits from a drizzle of that za'atar powder mixed with olive oil.
Brilliant. I'm definitely going to try making my own, that's for sure. You, I think, are credited, certainly for me, with my love of aubergines. Because I would never, I mean, I just grew up, aubergines were slimy and yuck. Just not something to be enjoyed. They're probably boiled to death at school, you know, that kind of thing. What is the best way, your favourite way to cook an aubergine?
So,
Do you have to salt them first of all? Do you have to slice them and soak them and salt them?
I sympathise with your school experiences. Because a bad aubergine is a very bad aubergine.
It's a very bad one.
Yeah, it's just not something that you want to eat. But we used to salt them more because the breeds that we get at the moment are not as bitter as they used to be. So historically, the old aubergines were quite bitter.
Mm.
So as you sprinkle them with salt before you cook them, the salt would draw out the moisture and with it some of the bitterness. This is not necessarily necessary anymore. So if you're going to fry the aubergine, like cut it into thin slices and fry it, I do tend to salt it a bit because that draws out the moisture, and the less moisture, the easier it is to fry. So you don't get the, you know, it becomes crispier. But my favorite way to cook aubergines, I cook them in various ways, but the easiest way for me, and I think for the general public, is to cut them into thick slices, like rounds, about 2 to 3 centimeters thick. So that's like over an inch. So quite a bit
really
thicker
thick,
than you. Yeah, quite a bit thicker than you. Thicker than you think.
Mm.
And then I brush them on both sides with quite a bit of olive oil. So they need to soak the oil and sprinkle with coarse sea salt, like molten salt.
Mm-hmm.
And put those rounds of aubergines soaked with oil and salted in a very hot oven at 200 or 220 for a good half hour. And what happens is that if you have a lot of them in the tray, they kind of steam and roast at the same time.
Mm.
And they go really meaty. But it's really important not to undercook them. You need to let them really brown nicely.
Okay.
And it's really important to get quite a lot of oil in there. So they need that oil. They need to drink that oil before you roast them in such a way.
Is olive oil the one oil that you use? Do you have others, or do you tend to default to olive oil all the time?
I default on olive oil just because I think it's so good. And I don't deep fry with olive oil, obviously, but I shallow fry with olive oil.
Mm.
And I think it's just a wonderful thing. I mean, in certain dishes that I cook, Asian dishes, etc., where I feel that this flavor of the olive oil is just not the right flavor, then I would use a more neutral oil like sunflower oil.
Mm.
But I feel that olive oil does the job for me in 95% of the of the cases, and that's what I use.
I know you're a friend and a fan of Tim Spector, as am I.
Yeah.
In fact, I think we collaborated recently on some filming for the COVID-19 Zoe app.
Oh, yes, we did.
Which was really good. And of course, talking to him about olive oil and gut health, that's really interesting. The extra virgin olive oil and the extra properties that they're kind of discovering now for helping the gut.
From all the fat that you're gonna consume, olive oil is really the one that Tim really found that is worthy of promoting, because it's just in the Mediterranean diet, you know, it's become synonymous to healthy eating. That's one of the contributors to health, olive oil. So I'm very happy to use olive oil all the time.
And I think it's the polyphenols that are particularly helpful, you know, with the gut. When I last saw him, he had these little tiny sachets or little kind of vessels that he'd been given of this olive leaf extract. It was so bitter, but you know, full of tannins. Every time you tasted it, you know, you could, it was like sucking a lemon, you know.
Yeah.
It was really, really sharp. But he said, you know, this is just one of the best things for the gut. But presumably, I know your new book is all about vegetables, but that is supremely healthy, isn't it, for the gut? You know, it's all about the insoluble fiber and all your prebiotics to feed your gut bacteria.
Yeah.
Do you think that vegetables need a bit more of a kind of starring role on our plates?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think vegetables, grains, legumes are really, they need, I mean, for various reasons. I've never been a preacher. I always think that people should eat what they love to eat. That's the first priority, because you cannot convince someone to eat something that's just strictly good for them unless they really enjoy it. There's just no way people will carry on eating undelicious food. But the thing is, vegetables are totally delicious. So it's a win-win situation. If you learn how to treat vegetables well, and in my new book, Flavor, it's all about injecting vegetables with a lot of flavor. We have like flavor bombs, like these combinations of chili and ginger and garlic.
I love that, flavor bombs.
Yeah.
or
soy sauce and mirin. And, you know, things that are really intense. If you let the vegetables sit with those flavors and soak them and kind of benefit from them, then they are equally delicious, if not more delicious than that bit of beautiful soul that you've done nothing to.
Yeah, for sure. Things like cauliflower, which is kind of a bit of a challenge. Again, you know, historically overboiled cauliflower is not a favorite, but it will absorb so much, won't it, if you prep it in the right way.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been cooking cauliflowers for a long time. So cauliflower, people normally don't know that, but it's a staple in the Middle East in Arabic cooking. Yeah. So when I was growing up, you would get like, you know, like the baba ganoush kind of salad with tahini, you know. So you have an equivalent with cauliflower. Mm. Or, like deep fried cauliflowers in tahini sauce and some parsley on top. It's absolutely delicious.
Gosh, it's making us all very hungry.
What I've been doing for quite a while now, and it's become familiar to some people, is a whole roasted cauliflower head, where you take the cauliflower with the leaves, open it up so the leaves are kind of pulled out, and put olive oil and butter on it, and lots of nice coarse sea salt, and let it cook for a long time, a good hour or so, and constantly baste it with the fat, with the oil, and the butter. And the leaves are like crisp up, and the cauliflower absorbs all these beautiful fats.
Yeah.
And you get something that you can only almost eat on its own. You can serve that wedge of cauliflower with some a squeeze of lemon or some creme fraiche or just something like that. And it's just a humble cauliflower. There's nothing else there. There's no tricks.
Transformed.
Totally.
Yeah. What are the other vegetables that you're particularly keen on that we perhaps aren't so familiar with over here?
Oh, well, I guess with vegetables, I will maybe kohlrabi. People are a little bit scared with kohlrabi, which is it's a kind of Northern European vegetable. It's like a cross between a radish and an apple. So it's slightly sweet,
right?
But it's got the crisp crunchiness and wateryness of radishes, and makes a beautiful, very thinly sliced for a salad. But we also roast it in the book. And mix it up with potatoes, like potato matchsticks and kohlrabi matchsticks together, mixed together with a chili spice blend, Korean chili spice mix.
Nice.
And we make like a rosti in a pan. So all these matchstick pieces held together by this spice paste. And then we throw some eggs on top. So it becomes this kind of rosti with each one has got a fried egg on top. And it's just, I mean, there's so many. Yeah. Daikon is another kind of Asian radish.
So daikon, it's like a white carrot?
Yeah, it's like a very long carrot.
Right.
It's from the radish family. And in Asian cooking, it's used a lot. We use a daikon to make what we call a turnip cake, which is essentially, it's called a turnip cake, but it uses a daikon because they're often confused. And it's a staple of Chinese restaurants. If you go and have your dim sum, you have these slices of turnip cake, which are, they've got like prawns and pork, and they're really, really delicious, served with soy sauce. But we've got a vegetarian, a vegan option. In the book, we use chestnut mushrooms.
Oh, nice.
And shiitake mushrooms and chestnuts and sesame. And we call it a cake, but it's these kind of thin slices. It looks like a terrine almost, and you drizzle it with soy sauce.
Mm.
And it's really, really delicious.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to Quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Talking about cakes, what about using vegetables in sweet things? I mean, here, you know, I guess in Britain, we know things like carrot cake. Mm. You know, where you physically grate carrot into cakes. I mean, are there other ways that you can use vegetables for desserts?
Absolutely. So in my previous book, Simple, I've got the equivalent of a carrot cake, but using beetroot. And it's a kind of a beetroot bread, but because of the high sugar content in sugar in the beet, it becomes quite sweet. So it's a wonderful, and it's got some spices and some goat's cheese. And when you cut through it, it's kind of like a rich bread, and it's absolutely delicious.
Wow.
Yeah.
That does sound wow.
And you can do a carrot cake with turnips, for instance, swap some of the carrots with turnips, and you really also get another layer, because turnips are quite nutty. So turnips go well with walnuts or with pecans. So you can kind of swap the nuts and the vegetables and makes in the equivalent of a carrot cake, but with
turnips.
With parsnips.
Parsnips are incredibly sweet.
Yeah.
Aren't they? I mean, almost too sweet. I have to say, I'm not a huge fan of parsnips. How do you cook
the
parsnips?
Parsnips in a cake are just fantastic.
Okay.
Like, they really like this.
Really?
The equivalent of a carrot cake with parsnips and pecans is just delicious.
Parsnip and pecan. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I will try it. Talk to me about pomegranate molasses.
Yeah.
Why do I need it? What am I going to do with it?
Okay. Well, pomegranate molasses is a pomegranate juice that's been reduced to a syrup. It's dark and it's very sweet and it's very sharp, because pomegranates are very acidic, very sharp. So imagine a citrusy reduction. So you could use it. The easiest way to is like think of like classic desserts, okay, like an Eton mess. So I often do like a Middle Eastern version of an Eton mess, when I take strawberries and meringue, and I add quite a lot of pomegranates and pomegranate molasses on top, and a little bit of rose water. The rose with the pomegranates and the strawberries, it's a really wonderful combination.
Yes.
And you really don't need to do anything more in order to transform your Eton mess to something which is completely different from the
different
origin, but still absolutely delicious. So you can do that with cream, or you can do the vanilla ice cream. So all these things are really good. That's great for pomegranate molasses. But pomegranate molasses, because it's both sweet and sour, it can go both in the sweet direction and in the savory direction. So you can use it in a chicken or lamb marinade because chicken goes well with sweet things. Mm. So you can take, olive oil, garlic, pomegranate molasses and let your chicken sit in that for a little while before you roast it, and then you can, and you need something savory there, like picked oregano leaves or sage leaves, and stick that in the oven, and it becomes all juicy and sweet and sticky by the time it comes out of the oven. And you can serve that with roast potatoes, and that's just really delicious.
So delicious. And rose is something else that actually I've discovered a lot more this year, and I make a rose petal granola using dried rose petals.
Yeah.
And obviously rose petals and rose water is such a feature again, isn't it, in Middle Eastern cooking?
Yes, totally. So rose, again, you can take it in the sweet direction, but also there's savory versions. You can, for instance, I'm trying to think of a really good use of rose petals. We often use rose petals to finish off pilavs, elaborate Middle Eastern rice dishes. Really benefit from that. So you can take like lamb mince and cook it off with onions and garlic and add your rice and kind of cook that slowly together. So it's kind of a lamb and a lamb pilav, and then finish it off with some pomegranate seeds and rose. Oh. And it's really, really delicious because we know lamb goes well with sweet and sour things.
You know, and of course, pistachios.
And pistachios and that would rose. That would be really good there as well. So you can finish your pilav with pistachio, rose and pomegranate. It's absolutely fantastic.
And pomegranate, you know, from a well-being perspective, we just know, again, so much about it now that it's full of antioxidants. You can buy pomegranate juice. You know, how much of this kind of nod towards well-being and wellness do you take on? Do you think when you're cooking, I'm going to make this because it's extra good for me? Or do you just purely do it on the flavor?
I do it on the flavor. I always have, I think, this subconscious thing that, you know, cooking with all these vegetables must be good.
Must be.
Because that's what we do all day long. I've got a small test kitchen in Camden in North London in which we do all our experiments. And just the other day, we made this, we're talking about vegetables and cakes. We made this courgette bread. So lots of grated courgette with most of the moisture drawn out and then mixed together with some cheese and egg and, you know, but creating some quite a substantial bread out of it.
Mm.
And I thought, like, I'd give that to my children. You know, that is just such a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah.
It's packed full of courgette, of a vegetable that is absolutely good for them with all the fibers. There was some thyme, there's some herbs. And I cut a slice and they absolutely love it. And it's like, instead of a normal slice of bread, they've got all these vegetables in their bread, and they love bread because kids love bread.
Yeah.
So it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, so nutritious.
Yeah.
And thinking about, you know, using cream and things like that in desserts, do you get tempted to go down the route of using things like kefir? Does kefir feature at all in Middle Eastern cooking? Because I love it. I mean, I drink kefir every day.
Yeah. So there is, it does feature quite a bit. So we use the equivalent like buttermilk or kefir. We use that to tenderize meat quite often. It goes into sauces for salads and for roasted vegetables. And like, for instance, I had in my first vegetable cookbook plenty, I have aubergines that are roasted, and then I make like this buttermilk yogurt. So often I substitute the buttermilk with kefir. So you can mix kefir with yogurt, which are, you know, very similar.
Yeah.
And you get a really kind of hyper acidity from that. And that goes, because aubergines, when you cook them the way I described, they are quite fatty. So it's very nice to cut that with something sharp and slightly creamy. And that's why yogurt is always so good, or anything dairy. And acidic goes well with things like that, with like roasted aubergine.
Excellent. Oh, I'm glad I've got your permission to chuck some kefir into your recipes.
You're allowed.
For somebody who is really stuck in a rut and they've, you know, just been cooking the same old things for years, you know, looking at some of your dishes might be a tiny bit scary because they might think, you know, they're quite complicated, or there's a lot of different flavors and things going on.
Mm.
If you had to pick some highlights out of flavor, what would you suggest that, you know, people perhaps started with just to get a taste of what's going on?
Yeah. Okay. So there's, for instance, I'm just trying to think. A good starter thing would be things like a hummus.
Okay.
So, you know, everybody know how good hummus is for you.
Yeah. So that's your chickpeas.
And tahini. And lemon juice. And I have two variations on hummus in this book. One of them has a whole, what we call, it sounds quite chefy, but actually it's a very easy thing to do, a confit garlic, which what happens, you take a whole garlic head and you just chop a bit of the top off. So to expose the cloves, put a bit of olive oil there and then cover it in foil and stick it in the oven for a good 45 minutes. When it comes out, you can squeeze all that garlic out because it's been cooked, essentially. It doesn't feel so garlicky.
Yeah.
We add that to our hummus, which is obviously really, really good for you. All those fresh chickpeas. But you can also use good jarred chickpeas. It's not a problem. Yeah. That confit garlic, which is, like I said, an easy thing to make. And then there's two types of toppings we use. One of them is we take some olive oil and add some aromatics, ginger, garlic, chili, and coriander.
Mm-hmm.
Just heat that up slowly just to infuse the oil with these flavors, but also to crispen them up so you get a bit of texture. And you spoon that on top of your hummus. Mm. And everybody likes a hummus, and it's like super healthy. Yeah. And you make your own in a matter of minutes.
Yeah, much easier and cheaper, isn't it, to make your own?
I think it's just so much better, because the thing is, when you buy it in the supermarket, it's cold, and cold things are just never as good as room temperature thing. And it's got a lot of added acidity, citric acid normally, to give it a long shelf life.
Right.
And so it's just too sharp for me. It's just too sharp and salty. All these things that are added to hummus that's supermarket made give it a longer shelf life, but really take away from the natural flavor of the chickpeas and the tahini and all the rest. Mm. So making your own is really a great way to start. We have the equivalent with white bean mash, something quite similar. I'm thinking of other. Oh, we talked about cooking a whole cauliflower.
I love that idea.
Yeah, I've got three recipes that use cooking a whole celeriac.
I love celeriac. Yeah. Tell me, what
celeriac
can I do with celeriac?
Is just an incredible thing, because again, like a cauliflower, you can take it, you can stick it in the oven for 3 hours.
Wow,
almost as it
that.
Is, just with a bit of oil and salt. And when it comes out, you can cut it into wonderful wedges, which you could, if you wanted, eat, like we said, with a squeeze of lemon. But I have three derivatives of that celeriac that comes out of the oven, three different recipes that use that celeriac. One of them is this with a sweet chili sauce. So you cut this the cooked celeriac into big dice or wedges, whatever you want, and you make a quick sweet chili sauce with chili, with soy, with some mirin, like very basic ingredients. You chop some chilies up and some spring onion, coriander, and you make a beautiful platter of cooked celeriac with a spicy, sweet, sour flavor. The other one is the recipe that I really love from the book. It's got celeriac turned into kind of almost like a meat, giving a meaty context with what is called a Café de Paris sauce, which is normally...
What is that? What's Café de Paris?
It's a bit like when you get in French bistros with your steak. So it's got tarragon and capers and cream.
Okay.
It's that kind of... But we make the equivalent to serve with our steak. So it's like a whole big, thick celeriac that's been cooked for a long time, became really beautifully brown and flavorsome. And we make that sauce. It's got a tiny bit of curry powder, onions, garlic, butter, and then we finish off with some cream and fresh tarragon.
Gosh.
So delicious.
Oh, it really, really is. And talk us through, before we finish, about your expanding empire, because you came... When you started in London, what was the first place you were? Notting Hill, is that right?
Yeah.
Was your first deli?
Yeah, in 2002, 18 years ago, I opened a deli in Notting Hill on Ledbury Road. That's the first Ottolenghi. And that's where everything started. And after that, we opened a restaurant on Upper Street in Islington, which does that and sit down. I've got two West End restaurants, Rovi and Nopi.
Mm-hmm.
One restaurant in Spitalfields on Ottolenghi. And one small deli in Belgravia. So it's
a lot. Yeah. And how have you been affected, obviously, by lockdown, and presumably everything obviously shut completely?
Yeah,
and
everything's
shut completely.
Like now? So we've reopened three of our locations at Rovi, in Fitzrovia. That's a restaurant where we cook vegetables on the grill. And not only vegetables, but it's a very vegetable focused restaurant.
Nice.
And we opened our restaurant on Upper Street in Notting Hill. So 3 out of the 6 are open. And the other 3 we're looking to open in September when it's a little bit busier,
because
central London is still very, very quiet.
Yeah.
So it had a really terrible impact on us.
Of course.
Because like everybody else, we've had to shut and furlough everybody, and it hasn't been easy. But since we've started reopening towards the end of May, that things are slightly and slowly getting back to normal. So we'll just hope that carries on.
And for the future, or is it too hard to predict now because of what's happening? What are your plans for the year ahead?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always working on cookbooks.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Because I love making them. So there's always things coming from that department. And we want to bring our restaurants back to life, which will take quite a while. And after that, probably more. But it's just that COVID has been such a big thing that now all the energy and all the focus is on getting all that back in place.
But I think maybe one of the admittedly very few benefits to have come out of it is perhaps a renewed focus on the quality of the food that we're eating and how it sustains us and nourishes us.
Yeah, I think people have really, during lockdown and now post-lockdown, are really, really interested in food in general.
Yeah.
And what they're eating, what the origin of their ingredients are, how they're using them. And this is not, I don't think that is going away.
No.
I think that's definitely staying.
Fantastic. Well, so much inspiration in flavor. So thank you very much, Jotam. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you, Liz. It was a pleasure.
And I'm afraid that is all we have time for today. Now, you can find all the links and the resources mentioned in today's show over on lizellewellbeing.com, where you can also sign up to my free weekly newsletter. And this comes to you packed with delicious veg-centric recipes and gut-friendly treats, including kefir. Huge thanks to all of those who have left us such lovely reviews. You know, it really does help others to find the show. So until the next time, go well. Bye-bye. The Liz Earle Wellbeing Show is presented by me, Liz Earle, with production by Amaryllis Earle and Harry Trevithick at Heart Dialogue. With thanks to my producer, Ellie Smith, and guest booker, Millie de la Morinière.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with ACAST. Use ACAST's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with ACAST. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.